It's All About Food with Karen Hartglass, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me on this beautiful autumn, October 5th. It is the 5th, isn't it? Anyway, I am live today, and I'm live every day in my mind, but on this show, it's live. It's happening right now if you're listening right now, and if you're not listening right now, it's another right now for you. And I'm also video, so if you're on the Progressive Radio Network right now, you can click on the video in addition to the listening to, or separate from the listening to, and I'm waving hello on the screen. Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining me today. What do we do on It's All About Food? We talk about food, my favorite subject. And for those that are listening, it's so important that we all do what we can to make this world a better place, and we can do it every time we eat. It's such a beautiful, empowering thing. And many people out there are doing different things to get this message out there, and it's so important to get the message out, and we're all working against big media and government and everything that wants us to eat foods that aren't good for us and do things that aren't going to be the best for us. So all of us out there, we're doing our part, and I'm talking to two wonderful people today that are doing their part. And first up, we are going to be talking with Tracy Lynn McWhirter. She's a speaker, author, and 20-year vegan who helps people achieve extraordinary health through better food choices. She directed the nation's first federally funded vegan nutrition program and worked on legislation to improve nutrition guidelines. McWhirter has been featured in the Washington Post, Ebony, and Essence, and has been a guest on NPR, Fox 5, NBC4, and many others. She was a contributing writer for Heart and Soul magazine and a nutrition consultant for the Black Women's Health Imperative. McWhirter is a graduate of Amherst College and New York University, where she received her Master's of Public Health Nutrition. She's the author of By Any Greens Necessary. We're going to be talking a bit about that today. And she lives in Washington, D.C. Welcome to It's All About Food, Tracy.
Hi, Karen. It's great to be here.
Gosh, you have no idea. I've been following you around for a long time and following your work, and I'm so excited to be able to talk to you today.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, well, the first thing I learned when I looked at your book, which came out last year, but the information is so important today more than ever.
Absolutely.
Is that we both became vegan in 1988.
Ah, okay, excellent. Long time.
A long time.
Yeah, we're both going on about 25 years, I guess.
That's right. And, you know, we all have a different story, and I think every story is worth hearing because we're trying to share this information with people, and people need to hear things over and over again sometimes in order to get it sink in and let it work, and sometimes one story resounds better than another.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Would you like me to share mine?
I sure would.
Okay. Well, I actually was introduced to vegetarianism in the seventh grade here in D.C. at Sidwell Friends School. I went there from third through 12th grade, and our seventh grade teachers decided that our class camping trip should be all vegetarian. Two of my three teachers were vegetarian.
Wow.
So I thought this was a horrible idea, and I wrote a petition and tried to get my classmates to sign it to protest this, and I was, you know, overruled. Only a couple of my friends signed it, and so we had what I considered a horrible camping trip because we had vegetarian food, peanut butter and honey sandwiches on whole wheat bread and fruit juice and granola.
Mm-hmm.
So I never gave it, vegetarianism a second thought after that. And fast forward 7 years, and I was a sophomore at Amherst College, as you mentioned, and our Black Student Union brought Dick Gregory to campus to talk about the political, economic, and social state of Black America.
Mm-hmm.
And instead he talked about the basically how unhealthfully most Black folks eat. And so I immediately thought back to my seventh grade teachers. I thought Dick Gregory was crazy too, like them. And I tried to tune him out, but what got me about his talk, he spoke for about 2.5 hours, was that he graphically traced the path of a hamburger from a cow on a factory farm to a fast food place. A cow on a factory farm through the slaughterhouse process to a fast food restaurant, to a clogged artery, to a heart attack. And I do mean graphically, and I had never heard anything like that before. And I have to say that at that time, as a sophomore in college, I was questioning a lot of things about oppression and racism and sexism and homophobia and capitalism and all of these things, all of these isms. And so I was open to questioning my food choices. As well. I didn't realize that, but apparently I was. And so after his lecture, I immediately gave up hamburgers and hot dogs for about a week and went back to eating meat because I thought it was too difficult, but I couldn't get what he said out of my mind. So I went home for that summer a few months later and read everything I could in the Library of Congress and the main library in D.C. about vegetarianism, and my mother and my middle sister did the same, and by the end of the summer, we decided to become vegetarian.
Wow.
That's basically what happened, and it took me about another year and a half to go vegan after that.
You bring up so many different things I want to talk about all at once. So it seems like you were an activist from very early on, and maybe you weren't an activist about what you're an activist about today, but you did have this focus and this energy in you to speak
definitely,
out.
Definitely, yes, absolutely. I mean, I thought, and I'm glad that you brought that up, because not too many people have asked me that, but it's very true. I do see myself as an activist, and I've always wanted to be some type of activist. I thought I was going to be a civil rights lawyer or an ACLU lawyer or a judge or a journalist. You know, I love to write, so I always saw myself as doing activist work forever. And so this is I never saw myself actually getting into nutrition and promoting veganism, you know, but this is, I do see this as activism for sure.
Yeah, it's making me think, it's a funny thing that there are probably a number of people that are activists by nature and want to speak out, but because they don't have the right information, they're pounding the drum for the wrong thing.
Okay.
But
yeah.
Anyway,
I mean,
I'm glad you're on this path. That's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
So then another thing, you were learning about all these different isms in college, and I think they're all related.
Oh, yeah. I think that they're definitely linked. And that's one of the things that drew me to vegetarianism and veganism, because of the way that I was introduced to it. I mean, Dick Gregory talked about being, an activist in the civil rights movement, and how the nonviolent philosophy of the movement impacted his, you know, basically influenced his decision to become vegetarian and then vegan. I mean, you know, Alvinia Fulton from Chicago, you know, other folks directly influenced him, but that ideology really made a huge difference for him. And I think when I came, I took my junior year away from Amherst, and I went to Kenya for the first semester and then Howard University here in D.C. for the second semester, and it was there at Howard that I was introduced to this large African-American vegan community that I did not know existed, even though I was born and raised in D.C. And all of these issues were linked for them. And this is how I learned about how to become vegan and why to become vegan. So they're all of these isms are definitely linked to me.
Yeah, well, the whole vegan movement is so important to me because I think it solves all the world's problems pretty much. And I think it's a lot for people to chew, no pun intended.
Right.
A lot of people take up a cause and they feel really passionate about it, and it could be so many different things, a difficult disease, looking for the cure, or some particular issue related to civil rights,
mm-hmm.
or different countries in turmoil, whatever it is. And I really think when it comes down to it, eating plant-based foods will solve most problems.
Yeah, it touches everything, for
mm-hmm.
sure. I mean,
it may sound so simple, but it is.
Yeah. But it's actually quite profound in its simplicity, and
mm-hmm.
I think that is what, people come at it. People enter veganism from different places, as you know, and I think that the fact that a person may enter for animal rights reasons or environmental reasons or health reasons, you know, the different ways that spiritual reasons, the different ways that people enter, they're all wonderful reasons. They're all valid, and they're all linked, whether the person knows it or not. They're touched by. They're touching, you know, all of these other avenues. And so for me, you know, that's how I entered it, but I kind of, I talk to people where they are. And for me, my experience is that most of the people that I get to talk to are interested for health reasons. And they're about the food, you know, and the food making them healthy. And so that tends to be, and that's where I entered. That tends to be
mm-hmm.
my focus. About 10 years into being vegan, I got into the animal rights advocacy issue, and I'm happy about that because it took me 10 years to get to that.
Well, I'm really grateful that there are so many people coming to this subject from so many different angles, because
exactly.
we need every angle possible, and different mm-hmm. people are going to hear the message in a space that they're comfortable with.
Right,
and so
exactly.
I'm not a religious person, but I am thrilled that there's a Christian vegetarian society and a Jewish vegetarian society and things that talk to people that are following those philosophies and religions. And the same thing with different cultures, different age groups. And so
mm-hmm.
your book, By Any Greens Necessary, is a revolutionary guide for black women who want to eat great, get healthy, lose weight, and look fat with a PH. So you're, in this particular book, appealing to a very specific community.
Well, yes, I'm definitely targeting black women, for sure. And I'm doing that because I want to do it, and also because...
Oh, we need it. We definitely need it.
Yeah, everyone needs to be, every group, you know, every demographic definitely needs to be targeted.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to target black women because why not? We're fabulous, but also we happen to be experiencing some really serious health issues. We're in a health crisis in a number of areas, and so I wanted to directly appeal to black women to say that many of these chronic diseases that we're dealing with, heart disease, high blood pressure, stroke, diabetes, overweight, obesity, are diet related. And, you know, to get the information is the bottom line. And then you can decide how you choose to use it. But I have found that, you know, talking to people for 20 plus years about veganism is that once people get the information, they tend to make some type of change right away because they have not heard this information before. They realize that they have been misinformed. and they want to do something. So whether it's adding, you know, more fruits and vegetables or more whole grains or deciding to go vegetarian and then vegan or, you know, something, I find that that people make a change right away, even if it's just reading more about it. And I, you know, I'm really inspired by that.
Does it blow you away sometimes after doing this for so many decades that there are still people that find this information new and surprising?
Yep.
Every day I say, oh, yeah, I don't need to do this anymore. Everybody knows. And then, no,
yeah,
I meet so many people. And I wonder, are they really hearing this information for the first time, or did they not want to hear it before? But for whatever reason, people need to hear things over and over and over.
Yeah, and people are at different points in where the place where they hear it. You know, I heard about it in seventh grade and dismissed it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of tweens and teens,
they're ready for it.
College students are real, you know, they're getting into it.
Mm-hmm.
I just wasn't ready to hear it at that time. It took me 7 more years to hear it. So, you know, definitely it needs to be repeated. But, yeah, you know, my next book is actually going to be talking about my reflections, my thoughts on veganism, for after 25 years, these past 25 years, because I have seen a lot of changes and I have had some frustrations around it that I want to talk about, mostly joys, but, you know, some frustrations and challenges, too. But I think, you know, I compare it to the cigarette ban, you know, the movement around cigarettes,
mm-hmm,
which, you know, of course, you know,
it took
50 years,
yep,
for that groundswell to happen. And I think that, you know, we're in the middle of that. It is definitely going to happen that most people are vegan, and it's just going to be like breathing.
Yeah.
That's definitely coming.
I'm looking forward to that. And I hope I live long enough to see it. But
I think we will.
But being vegans, we have a good chance of that.
Absolutely.
Of living longer. You mentioned in your book, a study in the New England Journal of Medicine showed that blacks develop heart disease and die at an earlier age than all other groups. That's really something, because already Americans, mm-hmm, and other countries now we're having this epidemic with heart disease and diabetes, and it's hitting all
right.
of us. But why is it hitting the black community even more so?
Well, it's heart disease and breast cancer. We get it. You know, black women tend to die of it quicker than white women do, and we get diagnosed with it later. So there, you know, it kind of happens with other issues as well, other diseases. But basically, you know, it's an issue of, to me, it's an issue, it's an economic issue. It's an issue of food availability. You know, first of all, people are misinformed. You know, we are, the food industry and the USDA, do not inform us about the healthiest foods to eat. That's the issue. That's the problem. So number one, we're misinformed. And then when we are informed, when we're lucky enough to get the information about vegan plant-based foods, it's not available in our communities. Most black folks are poor or low income.
Yep.
And we just don't have the access to healthy foods. And, you know, Michelle Obama is talking a lot about food deserts in her Let's Move campaign, and it's just true. We don't have access to it when we do know about it. And what we have access to is plenty of junk food, corner stores, fast food places. So it's an issue of information and economics, and that really takes a toll on us, you know. And so for me, it's not just, you know, promoting veganism on a, you know, individual basis, even, you know, through organizations, but it has to be a government, it has to be a governmental response. And I think that that's coming.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things that need to change, certainly.
Yeah.
I want to say that I read a lot of books on the vegan diet, and I read yours and loved it. By any greens necessary, I really, really did, and for lots of reasons. And I'm glad that so many of them are out there, but some of them are not very good.
Well, I appreciate that compliment. And I am a writer first, so that I really do appreciate that. I really tried.
It's calm. It's straightforward. It's real. And, you know, I don't think it... I know it says it's for black women, but it's really for everyone. And there's so many good points in here, and I just wanted to pick up a few of them. So one of them is where you talk in the very beginning about the government with the food pyramid, which is now the My Plate. And they're encouraging people to eat proteins, especially the ones that are low fat and lean. And you say dry beans are naturally lean and low fat, so it's absurd to include them in the same category. And you know, it's just something. I'm a big promoter of beans, but I never saw it put that way, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, and you know, it's definitely true, and I may have, you know, I did a lot of research for this book, so hopefully if that I either got that from myself or, you know, someone else.
Right.
But,
well, whoever gave
sure.
it, whatever.
But whoever.
It's
wherever
good.
It came from, it's definitely true.
It's good.
I mean, there's a lot of information about, you know, there's a lot of response to this protein equals meat issue, and it's just ridiculous.
Right. You write this little conversation here. Honey, what's for dinner? Baked saturated fat, dear. Great. How about dessert? There's a pint of chocolate cholesterol in the freezer. I mean, come on. Let's get some commercials like that going. I love it.
Thank you. Maybe I should talk to Peter or PCRM about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, you talk a bit about advertising, and I personally, that's like number one on my list. I think if we can shift the advertising dollars and if the government could shift the subsidy dollars from the unhealthy foods to the healthy foods, and we start seeing media talking about what's good for us rather than what's bad for us, things will change so quickly.
I agree. And that's the other issue, you know, There was another study that came out recently. I just read that food advertising is heavily in the junk food advertising, which is the majority of it. It's you know, heavily targeting kids of color, and kids of color watch more TV than other kids, and which means that families are watching it as well. And so that's another issue, you know, that we're being targeted with these horrible images and these, you know, these horrible messages about food.
Well, I definitely believe in shifting the tax structure where these foods that aren't good for us should be highly taxed, so it's not affordable and it's not profitable. Because when organic broccoli and apples become profitable and affordable, people are going to eat them and we're going to see more ads for them.
That's true, but it's also relative, you know, and I tell people that, you know, that there is this knee jerk that organic and healthy food is expensive. Yes, it can be. It often is, but it doesn't have to be. If you buy in bulk and, you know, and a few more tips I have in the book, but, you know, a bunch of collards or a bunch of kale organic costs $2.49 or $2.99 a pound.
Yep.
You know, and you can eat off of that for 2 days or one day for a family of four. And that's not that expensive, you know, and you know, getting beans and some whole grains in bulk, not that pricey.
You put dried beans next to any dollar meal or any fast food meal, and you're going to be saving tons of money. Dried beans win in any scenario.
Exactly. Throw them in a crock
they
pot,
are.
An electric crock pot on the counter, cook them while you're at work or doing something else, and get some great recipes for them. And you're golden. You know, it doesn't have to be that complicated.
Okay, we just have a few minutes left. I want to talk about chicken. chicken, the feathered vegetable.
Right.
You have here in your book, ladies, eating chicken does not make you black, it makes you blocked.
Yeah, I had to put a whole separate chapter about chicken on there because that's just, you know, I say in there that that's the thing people say to me, I can't give up my chicken, as if we're attached to the hip, you know, the chicken. And, of course, it's a culturally significant food. You know, it's part of soul food culture. I get that. But it's unhealthy. And, you know, chitlins are a part of it. And, you know, ribs are a part of it. All of these things that I ate growing up but came to realize are not healthy and not worth it. And so, yeah, I just think that, you know, people, the interesting thing, Karen, is that people will say, you know, I'm a vegetarian, and then if you probe a little further, just ask one or two more questions, they'll say, well, you know, I eat chicken. I only eat chicken and fish.
Right.
So dwindling
what
down.
What makes that okay? I mean, people got the message that red meat is bad, but there's still, and people really think fish is a great thing.
I know, but just in these two decades, you know, nobody is saying that they should eat these foods. They just say, yeah, I still eat these foods, you know. So there's been a shift. I shouldn't say nobody is saying that they should stop eating chicken and fish, because they do believe that it's healthy. But what I'm trying to say is that there's this understanding that there are other options out there than meat for protein. And so I think that is going to become more and more, you know, people are going to become more and more conscious of that. In another 10 years, they're going to drop the chicken. Probably in another 5 years, they're going to drop the fish. You know?
You think milk will be last to go?
Oh, gosh. Milk is
Which is the worst, right?
Milk is a monster. Yeah. Dairy, for sure. It's definitely, they're all going to go. They're all going to go. And it's just going to be, you know, there will always be people who eat it, just like there are people who smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And that was hard for me to come to terms with. But, you know, cigarette smokers understand what they're doing. And meat and dairy eaters will understand what they're doing. And, you know, and they may choose to do it. And there may be nothing we can do about that, but it's going to be that they're in the minority, not the majority.
You have some statistics in your book from the U.S. Is this from the USDA? Anyway, they're the percentages of people who are lactose intolerant, and I love telling people this because it's just mind-blowing. So 90% to 90% of Asian Americans are lactose intolerant, 95% of Native Americans, 60% to 75% of African Americans, 50% to 60% of Latinos, and 10% of European Americans. Okay, there's a lot of people can't drink
most
milk.
Most people in the world, yeah. I mean, that's the majority of the world's population. That's a lot of people for the USDA.
And yet we're cramming it down all of our school children, and they have tummy aches, and it makes it harder for them to learn, and it's criminal.
Yeah, and it's basically, you know, the USDA helping the milk and dairy industry to promote it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's where the groundswell has to happen, you know, and it's happening.
Right. I'm just thumbing through the book here, and another thing I pointed out, when you talked about some people who used to be vegan, but they were so anemic, they went back to eating meat, and I hear that all the time, and I know that if I was feeding those people, they'd still be vegan, and they'd be feeling great.
Yeah, you know, as if drinking blood, you know, through meat is the answer to, you know, anemia. But, you know, it raises a point in that just because it's vegan doesn't mean it's healthy. You know, you have to be a healthy vegan,
a starter. Coca-Cola and potato chips. I was talking to someone today
who said,
I really wish I could get my potato chips without salt. Like, stop the potato chips, period.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, you have to know what you're doing, and it doesn't take a lot to know what you're doing.
Tracy, thanks so much for joining me. What's your website?
ByAnyGreensNecessary.com.
Great. ByAnyGreensNecessary.com. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking with you. I probably could talk for many more hours with you, and maybe we'll have another opportunity.
I would love it. Thank you so much,
Karen.
Okay,
thank you. Look forward to your next book. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. We're going to take a quick break, and while we do, check out my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. Lots of recipes and great stuff up there. We'll be right back with Marisa Wolfson Miller and her documentary, Vegucated. Hello, I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Thanks for joining me, and we're back from our break. And next up, is Marisa Miller-Wolfson and the documentary that's going to premiere in New York next week, Veducated. She's a full-time food activist and has organized roughly 70 grassroots workshops and screenings of award-winning documentaries about healthy, humane, eco-friendly eating all across North America. She decided to tell a story that hadn't been told on film before and completed Veducated with help of colleagues at the Film Shop and the Brooklyn Filmmakers Collective. She borrowed heavily from her experience as a sketch comedian who has performed at the Chicago Improv Festival, Caroline's on Broadway, and the March for Women's Lives, where she shared a stage with Gloria Steinem. She has starred in award-winning short films and edited a documentary which screened at the Bushwick Film Festival and the Last Supper Film Festival. Her letters and articles have been published in USA Today magazine, The New York Times, and the Chicago Tribune, and her PSAs on environmental and animal protection issues have been viewed by thousands. She has enjoyed veducating the 1,300-plus members of her free online coaching program, Vegan at Heart, which was featured on Oprah.com. She's a founding member of the Sustainable Leadership Council of New York City and the New York City Foodprint Alliance, and is the honored recipient of Farm Sanctuary's Farm Animal Friend Award. Welcome, Marisa, to It's All About Food.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me, Karen.
Oh, gosh. Of course. Well, thank you. Thank you. We're all very grateful for everything that we're all trying to do. We're all on the same mission here.
Exactly.
And I just am excited whenever anything comes out that promotes the vegan message, be it a book, a cookbook, and a documentary. We need to flood the world with this stuff so that people get it.
I agree. The more tools we have in our tool belt, the better.
That's right. So you've got this film, and it's coming out in New York next week. Where's it going to be?
It's going to be at the SVA Theater, which is a beautiful space on West 23rd Street between 8th and 9th Avenues.
At what time?
Well, we're going to have a red carpet reception that starts at 6:45. The screening will start at 8. And then after the filmmaker Q&A with cast and crew, we'll have an after party that will go till about 11.
Ooh, and vegans can party.
That's right. And we can have lots of delicious food. We have restaurants and caterers from all over the city donating delicious stuff. So I'm really excited.
Yeah, we're all trying to do some very difficult work here, and there's some really terrible stuff going on with the way we treat animals and what's going on with the environment and what's going on with our health. But the beautiful thing is that this community, this vegan community, is a very loving, giving community. And I know that when different events go on in New York, many of the restaurants come through and donate a lot of great food.
That's right. I think it's not just promotion on their part. I mean, that seems to be an obvious conclusion.
Sure.
Oh, they just want people to try their food. But their postcards aren't necessarily out. It's really about giving back to the community because they know that the community is supporting them, and this is how they can support the community.
Oh, I agree. I think most of the veg restaurants are really in it for more than just making a quick buck.
Without a doubt.
Okay, so tell us a bit about Veducated. I've seen it, and it was a lot of fun. And I'm just wondering about some of the behind-the-scenes stuff. So what we learn in this film is the story of three people that went vegan for a limited amount of time. You want to tell me a little bit about it without giving away the whole story?
Sure. Well, I'll give you a little bit of the background. As you read in my bio, I had screened documentaries all around the country, and I kept seeing people make these changes as a result of having had their eyes opened to the truths about animal agriculture and so forth. And I thought, you know, someone should make a documentary that actually documents the process of going from zero to vegan. And once I saw Super Size Me, mm-hmm. I thought, well, there's the template that I'm going to use. I'm going to have a limited amount of time. Originally, it was going to be 4 weeks. It ended up being 6 because of various vacation and logistical issues. But I thought, okay, that's our template. Let's go for that, and let's speed up the process. Normally, when people go, you know, from meat and cheese lovers to vegan. It's not within 6 weeks. Sometimes it is, but I thought that would heighten the drama and add a, you know, a little bit of interest.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
So,
some of the things we don't see in the film, each of these three people had their own camera and they filmed themselves during the process. Is that what happened?
We had some of our crew cameras, but there were times when the crew couldn't be there, whether it was on vacation or whether it was just a casual night out with the family or, you know, some other kind of more private circumstance. And we thought, to get the most intimate and authentic moments, let's give the film subjects their own cameras so they can shoot on their own terms and get a little bit more realistic footage. And even though it's not as beautiful as the other footage because it's from consumer camcorders, I think that those pieces tend to be some of the favorite parts of the film just because they are authentic.
And how did these people know what to do? You had a limited amount of time. How did they jump right into it?
Well, we did go through some of the how-tos. We had a cooking demonstration with Dr. Furman and one of his cooks. We went to various stores. We went to restaurants. But it was a bit of a trial by fire. You know, I was in the middle of producing it, so I couldn't do a lot of the hand-holding that I really wanted to. But I thought that way it actually reflected the truth a little bit more. Not everyone has someone to walk them through every part of the process.
Right.
So it was a little bit like sink or swim, and they ended up swimming. So we were happy about that.
Yeah. Well, you cover a lot of different subjects in the story, and one of the things is that if people would think about it, and most people aren't paying attention to what's in their food and where their food comes from, is that if you wanted to go and see where your food came from, in a lot of cases it would be a very hard thing to do, especially when it comes to animal agriculture. All factory farms will not let you in. And
right,
I think it's very telling.
It is. It is. Well, there's a reason why, you know, there are these laws now basically making, quote unquote, trespassing on a factory farm, you know, a major crime. And back when we shot it, this wasn't really the case, but we were breaking a law to get just even snoop around outside a factory farm. And we didn't want to risk actually going in because we knew that we really could get into some major trouble. But I think you're right. It's very telling of the industry. I mean, the more people try to cover things up, the more it means they have things that need to be covered up.
Right. They want to hide. Yeah. So I think everybody should be clamoring and say, I want to see my food. I want to see
Agreed.
Where it comes from. Yeah. So what do you want to achieve with Veducated?
Well, I want to reach a more mainstream audience. And I think by choosing the people I did and by choosing the sort of structure that I did, I think it can appeal to a more mainstream audience because it's got a lot of humor. It covers a lot of issues. So it's not just about animals, not just about health. So that was the goal, was to hit a more mainstream audience. And, of course, obviously to create more of a dialogue around this issue, for people to think more seriously about the issue and ultimately to take action, whatever that means for them. But a big part of my agenda was to make a film that also celebrated any movement in a more plant-based direction. Obviously, I'm vegan. I want people to go vegan, but I'm also realistic that not everyone's going to do it on my time frame.
Mm-hmm.
So the message of the film is sort of, you know, let's celebrate all movement in a more compassionate and sustainable direction.
One of the things we see in the film is the impact of our friends and family on our decision to change our diet and how that might help or hinder what we want to achieve. And so we saw the mom with the two kids, and her kids seemed to be into what she was doing.
They were. They really were, in fact. Debbie has more or less stuck with it. She's not completely vegan, the daughter, Ellen's daughter, but she is mostly vegan. She's definitely vegetarian and is very outspoken about it now. She's in high school now, if you can believe it.
Wow.
And Mark, while he's not vegetarian, he certainly eats a lot more healthfully. He's very health conscious. Ellen says he watches whatever he puts into his body. He's an athlete now. So they definitely were impacted. Now, Tesla's family, as you saw in the film, they have some cultural ideas around plant-based living because of their Latin American heritage, which, you know, for them, it's sort of a foreign concept. And so they didn't really support Tesla in her process, and that ended up being the biggest challenge for her, above and beyond the fact that she doesn't really like vegetables or beans, although that's changing.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. I think for her and for a lot of people, the biggest challenge is not finding, you know, delicious, hearty, sustaining food that you love to eat. It's getting the social support and from your friends and family.
Yeah, that weighs very heavily. And
And I think that's probably one of the main reasons why people, if they do try to go vegan, don't actually stick with it.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I liked was that the three people involved, especially the guy, in the beginning, they didn't think that they were going to stick with this diet. And he was definitely moved. And for me, that just shows the power of working with individuals on a one-on-one basis and showing them the truth and how they'll just naturally change.
That's right. I think many people will. Every once in a while, you'll get a brother or a cousin or...
I mean, I know a lot of guys like the guy in that film who, you know, would say, I'll never do this.
Yes, yes. And then I always say, well, you can do anything if you have a good enough reason to. And what I try to do in the film is show them all these fantastic reasons for doing it. And Brian ended up being an easy sell at the end of the day. He was very skeptical at first, you know, as you see. But then, you know, he's a real critical thinker, and he saw things with his own eyes, which I think makes a huge difference, not just hearsay. Oh, well, so-and-so says this. No, he actually was proactive, and we saw some ugly things. And he had a very, you know, actually organic change of heart around this issue. And he has... in turn, influenced his circle and his girlfriend, who he met right afterwards. Mm. She went veg, and you know, so it ends up being a bit of a you create these ripples, you know, in your community, and that certainly happened with him.
I like it when that happened with someone's partner. Certainly, it's difficult for a lot of people in relationships. And some people who are vegan ultimately say, I only want to be with a vegan. It's really a difficult thing to balance. And I think ideally it's best if the two people agree on a philosophy that they want to live with, preferably a vegan philosophy, obviously. But it can be really difficult in a relationship when the two people are eating differently. Food is so important on so many levels, and it can enhance or destroy the romance.
It sure can, especially when there is an ethical component to it. You know, if one person's diabetic and, you know, they can't have sugar, the other partner is going to be supportive of that because it's, oh, well, this is in my partner's best interest or whatever.
Some partners will support it.
Some partners. Okay, that's true. No, that is. Are you speaking from experience?
Yeah, I know. Well, not personally, but I know a lot of people that have health issues and know what they need to do to get well, and their partners don't support it. Their partners say, "You do what you want. I want my meat."
That's true. That is true.
Mm-hmm.
It's sad, but true.
Yeah.
And then I think that has more to do with what's going on with them emotionally, psychologically, et cetera.
Yeah, that's a good point. When a lot of people tell me that they have problems in social circumstances with the vegan diet, I'm careful about how I approach this, but I think that those people are going to have problems in social circles with lots of issues, not just the diet. Because if you're comfortable with who you are and what you're doing, you will manage in social circles. You will be able to stand up for yourself or not talk about it and not make a big deal about it, whatever you're comfortable with. And I think it just brings up other issues.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, there are people who are afraid of appearing ungrateful if they don't accept whatever meat or cheese dish. And that's really, that's a little bit of a fear of saying, you know, I don't trust the other person to see me truthfully and respect who I am. I don't think it's just I'm worried about whether, you know, they think I'm grateful or not. It's actually something deeper. It's a base level of comfort, I think, with, like you said, who you are and how you live in the world.
Back to supporting in a family or with a couple, supporting what the one person wants to eat. You had Dr. Furman in your film, and he's my favorite doctor. I always love to see him out and about and doing what he does so well. In fact, he's going to be on this show next week. One of the things he says to his patients is if a family member has an issue, the whole family has to go on the health-promoting diet together. And that's the way it works. But it's hard for a lot of people to do that.
Wow, I didn't realize that, but that does make sense.
Mm-hmm. So let's say, if a child has celiac disease or if a child is lactose intolerant or whatever it is, the whole family should eat what the child's eating, because that it makes it so much more comfortable for the child who's experiencing the food issue. It's going to be hard enough. It breaks my heart when children have food issues. My niece, for example, has celiac disease. She's 6 years old. And it's just something that they have to deal with, feeling different or not being able to share in some of the excitement with other kids. And so at the home, it's so important that the family is together and does everything together.
Yeah. I mean, I think when it's a health issue, like with celiac, I think that that's probably an easier sell to a family member,
sure,
especially when it comes to children. But in terms of the ability to succeed on any, you know, within any kind of change, you're right. I'm a fan of The Biggest Loser. And one of The Biggest Loser, one of my favorite things to watch is the people who are on the show are obviously losing weight, and then you check in with their partners at home, and by the end, they've also lost weight, you know, as a way of supporting and, you know, sharing in a new healthy lifestyle.
Right. Well, the thing about this diet is that everybody's a winner. It's right for all the right reasons. The food's great. It's great for the environment. It's gentle on the planet. It's gentle on the animals. You can't lose with this diet. Some people think they're going to lose, are going to be deprived, but we know differently.
That's right. That's fear talking. If you're coming from, you know, a place of fear of deprivation, then that's more likely than not going to be your experience. Or more so than if you come at it with an attitude of adventure. If you say, oh, you know, I can't wait. I've never tried millet. I've never tried quinoa. I've never had, you know, a kale and sauerkraut sandwich, which I thought I'd never love, but I do. You know, all these things, you know, you don't miss the old things anymore. Your tastes adapt, and Brian says that in the film. So it is a win-win-win, and it is fulfilling and exciting and delicious.
Were there any big surprises in doing this film for you?
The biggest surprise was in the filmmaking process. Karen, you know how long I've been working on
that film. Everything takes a long time.
Oh, I had no idea. I mean, I really didn't. It was about 2 years ago that I finally attended a seminar, Women in Film or something, and one of the panelists said, well, you know, the average documentary takes 5 years,
wow,
or even 5 to 7 years, and costs $350,000. The average.
Mm-hmm.
So I discovered in this process that you cannot make a film that is fast and good and cheap. You get two out of the three, but you don't get all three.
Mm-hmm.
So we picked, you know, cheap and good.
And not so fast. Yeah.
Not so fast. So that was the biggest surprise, is just how much time, energy, and resources. People have no concept. I had no concept of what all goes into making a film.
Do you know what you want to do next?
I have an idea for a short documentary that is going to be nearly impossible because it involves being on a factory farm and shooting, so I don't know
right.
if that's ever going to happen, mm-hmm. but I feel a book coming on. I feel that it's sort of taking shape, and if I need to take a little break from filmmaking, which I think might be healthy at this point, not just for me, but for my marriage and my family life, I think a book is the next project.
Right. Well, that's another yeah. thing that could go very quickly or go and take a very long time.
Exactly.
Okay, so you live in the greatest city in the world, in my opinion, and we have the best restaurants to go to. Can I ask you what some of your favorites are?
Absolutely. Well, I can't list a favorite, of New York City without mentioning Candle 79.
We love Candle 79.
love
Bard and Joy. Yes.
And Benet and Angel
and
the whole
Absolutely.
Crew. They're fantastic. I just have certain favorite dishes at that restaurant and at other restaurants. You know, the dessert case at Peace Food Cafe and their sandwiches are wonderful. There's a classic sundae down at Pure Food and Wine. You'll notice that I have a sweet tooth here.
Mm-hmm.
There's a delicious pho, which is a Vietnamese soup, at Lan Cafe on the Lower East Side.
Mm.
And you can take a quick 5-minute walk to Lula's Sweet Apothecary. There I go again with the sweets.
The sweets.
Get an ice cream there. But, I'd say those are it. I mean, those are my favorites. I enjoy, certain dishes at every restaurant around the city. And we have so many wonderful ones.
Yeah, well, more and more restaurants in Manhattan and in many other places are offering vegan options. I was just at a restaurant today that was not vegetarian, and all their soups were vegan, which surprised me. And, it's getting more comfortable where you don't have to apologize and say, I'm a vegan, can I get this? More people know about it, and it's a good thing. It's taken time.
It is.
It's
Wait,
taken
may I ask
time.
What this restaurant was with the soup?
Yeah, this was... I wrote it down. Where did I put it? Oh, Osteria Al Doge.
Where's that?
It's on West 44th, east of Broadway. It's an Italian restaurant. And I had a very nice grilled vegetable plate, and the soup was vegan, pea soup.
Wonderful. That is wonderful.
Good.
No, I love it. I love it.
But the person I was eating with was asking me, where are there any vegan restaurants in Manhattan? And it was funny to me because, there are more here than anywhere in the world, and there are so many choices. You can get vegan Korean, vegan Japanese, vegan Chinese, vegan American. There's cakes and cookies and ice cream and anything you want. You could be fat vegan
if you want to.
Yes,
and if I actually indulge in as many sweets as I'd really want to, I would be one. I'm amazed. I mean, every week there's a new one. I just found out last week that there's going to be a new Blossom opening up on 67th and Amsterdam.
Yeah, they're amazing. I don't know how they're doing it because they've got the Coco V opposite the Blossom restaurant and the Cafe Blossom and the V Note, and they just keep adding new ones, which is phenomenal. Very
wonderful.
Good.
Yes.
Well, I just like to say, and it's great that all... that there's everything available. If somebody wants to have it vegan, you can have your sweets and treats. Personally, I like to promote a really healthy vegan diet, which is low on the unholy trinity of salt, sugar, and fat. But it's good to know that if you want your treats and you have a craving for something, it really is out there and it's available.
That's right. I also have to mention that as you go through this process, I think at first you start to eat more vegan versions of what you're used to, and they will be higher in salt
and fat and sugar. But then as your tastes evolve and as you start to try new things, you don't need to rely on that stuff anymore.
Right.
One criticism I've had of the film is, well, why do you show so many soy meats, so many, you know, vegan, so much vegan dairy and so forth? And I say, well, it's because we really captured these people in their transitional phase.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, your diet on day 12 of being vegan is going to be very different than 12 months being vegan or 12 years.
Absolutely.
I'm sure you change.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm in love with my juicer. I do green juices. I never would have thought I would have been a juicer. I love my Vitamix. I do smoothies with fruit and kale. I never knew what kale was, let alone, you know, that I could put it in a smoothie that tasted delicious. So there is definitely an evolution that happens. So when I hear some criticism, oh, well, the vegan diet, that's all fake this, fake that.
Right. It's all good.
It's all in the process.
That's right. We've all
and
been there.
And it's also okay to treat yourself, I think, you know, to feel like a normal human being, to treat yourself on occasion.
Marissa, we've come to the end of this show. Thank you so much for joining me, and the very best to you and Vegucated. Have a great premiere.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining me. Go to getvegucated.com for more information on the film. Have a great day, Marissa. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Please go to my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. Lots of fabulous, delicious, gorgeous recipes that are all plant-based. A lot of them are gluten-free. And join me next week on It's All About Food. We're going to have my favorite doctor, Dr. Furman's going to be on. So check with us then. Have a delicious week.